Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants.
Let's go, Giants! Let's go, Giants!
With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, May 12th, 2021, and this is episode 224 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of your first place. That's right, still in first place, San Francisco Giants. We are live on Facebook, so if you're 50 or over, welcome! Sorry, that's an inside joke. I'm Chad King, hosting today, and joining me, as always, is Eric Nathanson. What's up, dude?
Not much. I'm just kind of giddy that the Giants are a first place ball club. I mean, the Dodgers are not doing what they're supposed to do. So anytime we get to talk about a first place club, we got to take advantage of it. And I'm excited for today's show.
And then also joining us, who is helping out with Mustache May, doing his job to support this team, support these players, one Willie Deals Gregory. What's up, man?
Not much, dude. Just it's an off day. It's kind of annoying. I wish there was baseball. At least we could talk about it.
I know. See, that's the way I look at it. You know, a lot of times off days are on Mondays or whatever, so that's usually when we record. We had to delay a couple of days, no big deal. We got a lot to go over, so we might as well get right into it. So since we last recorded, the Giants went 5-3, but they are overall 22-14, still in first place. Two games ahead of the Padres, three ahead of the Dodgers, five ahead of the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies are somewhere down in the cellar. They are also tied for the best record in all of baseball with St. Louis, and they are now 14-4 at home after their little two-game mini sweep of the Rangers. I mean, I'm going to say this, they are approaching 40 games. That's a quarter of the way through the season. And I think a lot of people really take a look at that quarter mark as, all right, this might be a good snapshot of what this team really is. I didn't think they'd
ESPN be... does. ESPN yeah. thinks that. They Giants are number two in the power ranking.
Exactly. The power rank. It's amazing. They were not cracking up, not cracking up, not cracking up. Now suddenly ESPN, they went from 16-8, now 8-2.
Yeah.
So I think more national reporters are finally starting to see the potential of this team. And I think one thing that we can look at in particular, and I'm not going to throw it up on the screen, but someone on Facebook, actually, I think it was in the Giants Chatter Facebook group, went through and looked at the Giants records where they had at least 22 wins at the 36 game mark. And I think there's like, I don't know, 15 or so seasons. And it's pretty remarkable. If you look at this whole list, every single team finished above 500 for the year. And so I think the takeaway from this is that, hey, at this point, you know, almost 40 games in the season, if you're 8 games above 500, there's a pretty damn good chance. In fact, there's been 100% of the times the Giants have been at this mark at this point in the season, they've always finished above 500. So I think that really does spell kind of a good tidings, I guess.
I mean,
Giants coming in.
They haven't even been healthy this season. No. So
yeah,
why wouldn't we be? Like, we could be better than this, clearly. Like, guys have been missing, guys have been hurt, guys have been out, and...
Yeah,
there's been Cueto came back and kind of sucked, but Cueto came back. It's like we're kind of patchworking together a 6-11 ball club somehow. I don't
really bring up a good point. And ESPN and the national writers have been picking up on that too. And we've talked about it, how, you know, their starters have been, you know, through the roof, and that's really what's been carrying this team. The bullpen's been mediocre to maybe below average. The hitting, of course, has been poor, but the timing has been very, very good. That's starting to pick up. The starters have consistently stayed well, and the bullpen's still spotty. But if you look at the past, there's been three other teams that were exactly 22-14. 1993, we all know that team. That was probably one of the best teams in Giants history, right? 103 wins. I know they finished second, but 103 wins. 1987. Another great team, 90-72. They won the division, and of course, they lost the NLCS to the Cardinals that year. And then 1964, they also went 90-72, but they actually finished in fourth. Of course, that was long before the divisional play, because that was 1964. You know, this is great.
And they were only three games back, though, in fourth place. So it's not like they weren't in contention until the last week.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this if this has any indication of the forecast, the Giants are going to do really well. And, in fact, they finished last season in that same 36-game stretch, 21-15. So if you add the two up, they're like 43 and something. Anyway, they're playing 600 ball over their last 72 games. That's, you know, significant.
That's kind of ridiculous. It's we're going to get into the games here and the homestand that they had and the fact that they're ripping off, what are they, 14-4 at home, you said?
Yeah.
They're ripping off so many wins at home is really what it is, because they've only played 500 ball or 8-10 on the road thus far.
Yeah, they're worse than 500 on the road, yeah. Which is concerning because they're about to go on a long-ass road trip. But it's against – it's not like it's against, you know.
Yeah,
it's the, Pirates and the Reds, but you know.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, and the Giants, you know, like to hit.
Hey, look, you know, they got all this big road trip coming up. If they can go 500, that'd be great. But it is Pittsburgh, and you'd hope they come back, you know, five and three kind of record.
Pittsburgh is going to be – should be – yeah. But, I mean, if you think about it, too, like the Rockies series, we were supposed to at least be 3-1 there. Like, there was, like, definitely some – missed opportunities. They could easily have above 500 on the road, and that's the other weird thing about this team. We've had some really disappointing losses, and yet we're still the best team in baseball. You know, it's like I read comments and stuff, and people are like agonizing over these games, and I'm like, but look at the record, guys. Like, it's fine. Yeah. You know, did we expect this? No. So, but you know, what happens when you start this hot is now the expectations come in, right? Now suddenly we're like, oh, duh, we're supposed to win every game now. I'm still like pleasantly surprised when I look at the score and I'm like, oh, we beat the Padres today? Cool.
I know. Right?
I didn't see that coming.
The Giants have a winning record against the Padres right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, after nine games, they've played over half their games against.
We still haven't played the Dodgers, by the way. But we get to play them at home after this road trip. So. You know, come on in, baby. This is where we thrive.
The Giants also have not lost more than two games in a row the entire season.
Yeah.
And that really speaks to something. I mean, every one of these gut-wrenching losses you're talking about that we've had, we saw it. Opening day was one of them.
Yeah.
They had one against Miami. They had one against Colorado last week. They got blown out on Sunday, and every single one of them
was it the Phillies game too, right?
And then they came home and they won the next game. So every time they've gotten their hearts ripped out, they've come back and won the next game, which is really kind of impressive. I even heard Kapler talking about that the other day on one of the pre or the posts, that they pride themselves on the fact that losses are not staying with them. These guys seem to know they're good.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like our whole staff is stoppers. You know?
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I did see a Kapler interview. I don't know if it's the same one you're referring to, because he might have been asked several times, but it was on the national media. It was on MLB Network or whatever. And he, by the way, he had his like cell phone out there and it was like rocking on the desk. And so his head was bouncing the whole time. It was really annoying. But they asked him about that, the national writers. They said, hey, you know, you guys are still in first place, but you've had some gut-wrenching losses this year and you guys just seem to be back on your feet in the next game. And Kapler joked by going, well, thank you for pointing out those heart-wrenching losses. We really appreciate that. Like, he was trying to joke. But it is right. And I know that tagline, resilient SF, is kind of lame. I don't like it. It's not catchy. So far, it's been pretty appropriate for the way they've responded to these heart-wrenching losses. It's I think fans carry that emotion on their sleeve way longer than the players do. The players have already learned through their experience of many, many years of baseball and many, many years of failure. They just shrug it off and go, that's part of the game. You're going to lose heartbreakers. You know, you're going to go 0-for-4. You're going to strike out four times. You just brush yourself off. You got to be confident in your ability and your team. And then you just move on to the next game. And you got to have a short-term memory. You know, you do.
I think another stat that points to the way they operate is they've in blowout games, 5+ runs or more, they're 4-1. So Sunday was the only time they've gotten blown out this season. There really is something to be said about this offense. Yesterday's game was a perfect example of it. They fell behind 1-0, and within two batters, the game was tied. And you remember like 2 years ago when they had that stat? Well, the Giants haven't scored in the first inning for 28 straight games or some crap like that. And now we don't even have to worry about that with the lineup and the way these guys hit the ball. It's something. You're right. They're 22 and 14. They could be 25, 26 wins at this point.
All right, well, let's get into it for the week, and we're not going to break down every game for 10 minutes, but I do want to talk about each series at least a little bit. So they started at Colorado. The first game was delayed because of weather, so they postponed it for a doubleheader the next day. And, of course, this year, just like last year, doubleheaders are seven-inning games, which is still I don't like it. It takes some time getting used to. I hope it's something they don't keep. They're still saying it's because of the pandemic and trying to reduce innings and time on the field and injuries and all that stuff. So like next year when we're kind of back to whatever new normal we're at, they just go back to nine inning games. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it'd be really nice. But that said, game one, I mean, I think Willie and I were texting back and forth. It was like, we just saw like a month's worth of offense in the first inning, but the Giants exploded for 10 runs.
10 runs, baby.
In the first. Yeah. And that was just freaking incredible. I mean, it wouldn't stop.
Yeah, it was the most first inning runs since like 60 something. Crazy.
Right. And so, of course, Brandon Belt himself got up twice in the inning. He ended up having five RBIs.
DFA this guy. He's garbage.
That's right. You know, DFA him. He sucks. He just leads the team in home runs and RBIs. He's horrible. But here he is in the first inning. They're already up 5-0 with two outs, bases loaded, full count.
This has to be a strike if you're Chacin. It is, and it's high, and deep, out of here.
Chacin, by the way, second pitcher in that game. And it's he did not start that game.
I think he went back to that spot.
He went to Brandon Belt.
That was
spot,
not
a sure.
cheap shot.
Tried to
that's
for no, a sinker sure. down at the bottom.
So that was beautiful.
That's that beautiful. Belt special, man, that just golfed it out to right field like that. So he had two hits in that inning, five RBIs in that inning. That's quite an inning. Good job.
It's a good week for some guys.
Yeah.
I think that was a game. Didn't Buster and Crawford also homer in that game? And it was like the third or fourth time they've all homered in the same game.
Yeah. Speaking of Buster, oh, nice. His first inning homer. Go.
Oppo?
Posey goes the other way. This is hit well and out of here. Buster Posey with his seventh home run of the season.
Dwayne Kuiper sounds surprised.
This ballpark.
No, he did. Didn't
this
he?
Is hit well. Whoa, and out of here. Well.
It's just carrying. Right, and we're going to talk about Buster Posey right a lot, but man, this guy is just, he's looking screen, like the 2012 air, Buster Posey. The ball jumps. I don't think anyone saw this coming.
Down and out of the no, zone. Not at all. Again, the way he is driving the ball to the opposite field is really how you know he's locked in. That's always something we've talked about over the years with Buster, that when he's good, he's using the whole field, especially right center field, and he is specializing in it this year.
I will say, I did say this last year, Buster has a full year off, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, and I admit, I mean, if that's what you were thinking, you're right, because he had his hip surgery right at the end of the 2018 season. Yeah. So everybody thought 2019 was going to be the year, and it wasn't. He only had seven bombs in 2019. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, the hip surgery didn't work. It's just age. It just caught up to him. It's too many years
catching.
It's too many.
It's catching.
Yeah, too many playoff games catching. It's too many whatever you want to call it.
There's not a lot of Yadier Molinas out there, you know what I mean? Yeah. You just can freaking do it every year and not have it seem to wear on their body. That's just not how catching works, right? So, but
he takes off a year to be with his twins because of COVID, and it worked. I guess all that diaper tossing and rest on his hip. No, he said he worked on a lot of mobility and flexion and all those things.
I mean, with a
and
year
I think it's
off,
very obvious. Yeah.
Yeah, a year off and not being around a baseball team, not be traveling, not be doing all that stuff. You know, you can really kind of get into the nitty gritty of rehabbing your body. Yeah. And rehabbing your body when you don't actually have an injury, that's kind of dope. Nobody really gets to do that, right? Everybody's that's always true. Like working on some ligament or something. Like he could just work on like making his body healthier, and he looks better, honestly.
He's going to re-enter the Hall of Fame chat if he continues this season. I mean, he's not going to hit like 380 all year or anything like that. But he's
I feel like the Hall of Fame, we need to start getting over specific stats at this point. Because clearly those don't fucking matter anyway. You know, when you got like, you know, Barry Bonds is not in. Just start talking about like legacy, man. A guy who comes in, rookie of the year, World Series title, MVP, three World Series titles. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff that I think matters, right?
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, for those of you who have not checked out our YouTube channel, there's this classic interview that we did with Buster Posey back in, I believe it was 2013, after he won his MVP and they won the World Series. And Willie, you asked him about catcher face.
Yeah. He did not know what the fuck I was talking about.
He didn't know what you're talking about.
He still doesn't have it, by the way. He still somehow he's escaped the
he doesn't look like an old leather
face. Yeah. He's gotten hit in the head plenty of times.
That was so funny when you asked him
because he's such a baby face. He always has been, you know.
I know.
He's got some gray around the edges though. I think just see that.
I want Buster to join Mustache May. When are we going to get that Buster stash, baby?
Can he, though? I mean,
I don't know if he can.
I don't think
he might be like me, with the
he might have
problem.
The Chad King problems. Yeah.
Well, Maurice, apparently Dubon wanted to join in 2 weeks later.
Really?
He still didn't have a mustache.
He has that, like, 15-year-old kid mustache.
He does.
He's like, yeah.
He's trying
so hard.
Yeah. He's joking about it, but he knows.
Well, that means you don't have to test him for PDAs then, you know?
No. No HGH going into him, for damn sure. Eric, you're right. Belt, Crawford, and Posey all hit bombs that game. And then Belt and Posey each had three hits. Aaron Sanchez just didn't have it. He had four earned runs and four innings pitched, but you know, he got it to the bullpen and they ended up winning by that same score, or by the score of 12-4. The Giants ended up scoring two more. So that's fine. Then we get into the second game of the doubleheader, and this is the one that is the last gut punch they really had. And of course they went up 6-2 going into the last inning, which was the seventh. And the Rockies just, I don't know what angel in the outfield blessed them, but Jake McGee came out there and got two out of the first three guys out. So there was a runner on first with two outs, and they still lead by six runs. And it was just death by
Colorado
hit and walks and bloops. And then ultimately, of course, they brought in Doval, who, I mean, let's be honest, the first hit that he gave up was the bloop. It had an expected batting average of 100. But Duggar was playing deep for the no doubles defense, and you have the Colorado depth in the outfield. Of course, it's a massive outfield. So basically, the analytics literally say in 29 out of 30 ballparks, that would have been caught. And again, it had that expected batting average, according to StatCast, of 100. So you can't pin that on Duvall. He made a good pitch. The guy got jammed, but it was enough to bloop it in, and then you got runners on the corners, and then, of course, Charlie Blackmon. I think we all had bad feelings because that was the fourth consecutive hit by the Rockies with two outs. But once Blackmon got up there, it was like, oh, God. Like, he's been kind of cold this year. This is a perfect spot for a veteran like him, right? And sure enough, Duvall, who throws 100 miles an hour, had 14 pitches. 12 of them were sliders. I didn't quite understand the pitch selection. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. It was a slider that Blackmon ripped out for the three-run
home run. Sliders in Colorado, historically not great.
Yeah, so I still didn't hear anything about why he might have done it. Maybe he didn't.
Doesn't
have
he throw like 99? What the hell are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't
throw
know.
Throw the heater.
Exactly. Throw him the heater, Ricky. But I don't know, Eric, did you hear anything about why he was throwing?
No, I think it was an overcorrection from the last time he was out and he got beat on the fastball. I think it was Profar who beat him on a fastball a couple of outings ago, and it kind of gave him the jitters. And so he's constantly going to the slider. And like you said, Coors is where sliders go to die. I mean, this is ridiculous. The Giants had a 99% win probability after two outs in the seventh inning.
Yeah.
When they gave up the winning home run, they had an 88% win probability. I mean, that's just horrible. Duvall does not need to be in that situation. And you're right. If he is in that situation, give him the heater. You're not kidding. That's what got you to the big leagues. That is what people are supposed to fear from you.
Yeah. Instead, and, you know, look, if he got beat on a slider, he got beat on a slider. But if it was like he had, you know, 9 fastballs and 3 sliders. You're like, well, he tried to get a slider by Blackman with 2 strikes. But it really was weird because Blackman, basically all he saw were sliders. So I don't know. To me, it seemed like that was within his memory tank. Like he had seen the pattern. He had seen the pitch. And he was just geared up for it. And it wasn't good placement, obviously. He was up center in the zone, and he just yanked it, like, way out of there. But, yeah, it was one of those games where, again, it's one thing to lose. Like, if McGee comes in with a 1 or 2-run lead, and, you know, it's a bleeder, blooper, and a blast or something, you're like, well, that happens a few times a year. But the way it happened, having a 4-run lead with a runner on base and 2 outs, that's the improbability of getting 5 consecutive hits capped off by the home run is so low. Like you said, 99% win probability. I mean, this is dumb. This is dumb.
Two out hits, man. That's why I say
that a lot. Two out hits.
Yeah, right. That is, though. That's why I say it's the key to life. I mean,
Staines. They had 10 hits in the game, and they had 6 in that inning, 5 in a row with 2 outs. So half of their hits came with on the last out that they had. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
5 hits for 5 and 2 out rallies.
That's some New York Mets against the Red Sox type voodoo.
Yeah,
it's just Colorado, man. Anything can happen there. It's always. Oh my God.
Yeah, someone,
and it always does.
Yeah,
talking about, Willie,
like 10 runs in a first inning. That could happen.
Right.
There,
you know? Giants scored 20 there last year.
It just happens, right? But you know, you're referring to Facebook and like how it's not always the best forum. I mean, I even put something in there going, hey, things happen in Colorado. What are you going to do? It was kind of like a shrug emoji sort of thing. And this guy got all over me going, that was not the park. That was all Kepler. There's 100% Kepler.
Oh, it was never Kepler. Should put it in. Kepler threw 12 sliders.
And I was like,
I forgot that Kepler threw the 12 sliders. You know, yeah.
Back away slowly from the keyboard. Let's not say anything.
Kepler called every one of those sliders from the dugout, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was funny. Like, people, like,
jeez, man.
If you're going to blame every loss on Kepler, then you also have to give him credit for 22 wins. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, suck it. Sorry.
Well,
suck it, all you Kepler haters. 22 wins with this fucking team.
Like, I got some highlights queued up just for that aspect. with the pinch hitters that he had against Texas. But also, remember, you have to realize how many, they have 5 pinch hit home runs this year, leads the majors. So, I mean, he's pushing the right buttons on offense. I agree that he doesn't always push the right buttons on the bullpen, but overall, his decisions really have helped this team get to 22 wins.
But that's one of those it's like one of those things where it's like with a bullpen's move every single time it goes wrong, it's always your fault. You know what I mean? It's like
you're never going to be 100%.
Are you going to talk about? Yeah, are you going to talk about all the times he? You know, are you going to talk about how he picked the right closer for this season? Clearly, at this point, are you going to talk about how he he actually gave Rodgers a chance to keep going out there, even though apparently everybody else in the world thinks that Rodgers is hot garbage. You know, it's like he's definitely like every time he makes a right decision, it's like, oh well, yeah, well that should have happened. And every time he makes a wrong decision, it's like, well, yeah, see. Look at that horrible move he just made. And that's hindsight. Like this is the thing about fandom. Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about unless you're in the dugout. Are you going to make better moves? I don't know if you are. And, you can be critical, but I mean, within reason, you know what I mean?
My inner boomer is yelling at me for not buying Dogecoin again. So, I mean, you know, shit happens.
I just bought some today, by the way. It dipped. 45 cents. I'm buying it right now.
Oh,
I mean, you got to say for Kepler, he put his closer out there with a 4-run lead. You should expect that to be enough.
Yeah, what the hell are you asking him to do there?
That's the
you
whole
should
thing.
Have known. Like, yeah, it should have been this guy.
That's enough. Like, that's enough. Your closer with a 4-run lead, that's enough. You know, you can't put that on Kepler on that day.
It's like I say, like if you're going to get mad at him for the losses, you also have to give him credit for the wins. And you know what I mean? When you're the best team in baseball, he's doing something right.
Doing something.
Sorry, we weren't expected to be here, and we are. How? Probably Kepler. Probably has something to do with that.
Farhan had something to do with it too.
That's true.
All this depth. I mean,
probably Posey and Belt and the pitching staff. You know what I mean? Yeah, obviously. But I mean, it doesn't.
Together. Yeah.
The buck doesn't stop. You know, anywhere. It's like it's everybody's responsible for all of it. So.
So that was a 6-run seventh, which sunk the Giants, and they played the last game of the series the next day, and another 6-run inning bit them in the ass. I think it was a 3rd inning. The Rockies scored 6 after the Giants took a 2-run lead. Now, the Giants did come crawling back and made it 6-5. They'd scored a run in the 9th, and they had runners on the corners at the time when they're 90 feet away. They just couldn't make it happen. Crawford and Ruff homered in that game. But, you know, look, you know, you expect the Giants maybe to lay flat the next day. They didn't lay flat. Logan Webb had a tough inning, and that's the way it went. But they came crawling back, and they almost tied it. So I think they showed some spunk there, but they did end up losing 2 of 3 in Colorado. But it's the house of horrors, right? I mean, we always expect the Giants to lose 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4 there. That's just kind of the norm. But, you know, we were one pitch away several times from taking 2 out of 3, and everyone would have felt so much better about it. But that's baseball. It's game inches. It happens. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? But
then we're still 6-3 versus Colorado this year.
And by the way, talking about a game of inches, have we talked about Ruff's grand slam that was and then wasn't? That was a game of inches right there. That was another game that we were supposed to win, right? And a lot of people, I remember people in the chat were like, oh, we looked so horrible in this game. And I'm like, we were 4 inches away from like winning this game. This
That was the night Darvish got all the praise. Like, oh
yeah, Darvish is so good. Yeah.
Right. And if it wasn't for like 3 inches,
it's like, this is
a completely different
game. This is the thing about baseball. It's like, that's the difference between a win and a loss, right? Is something like that. And there's so many of those. You talked about this Rockies, the hits that they were getting were not, it wasn't like they were just blasting the ball out of the ballpark over and over again. It was a bunch of bloops and, you know, and then a blast. That's how it works.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, how I looked at the win probability, just like Eric did for this last Rockies game, and they said, the Grand Slam was counted at first, remember? And so they actually had the win probability calculated. It had jumped to like 89% for the Giants. Mm-hmm. And then it was reversed, and it was like, it just like flip-flopped between the two teams. And you're right. I mean, it was a game of inches. And then Yu Darvish is credited. Oh, he was masterful. You know, it's like, if it wasn't overturned, it would have been like, Yu Darvish is crushed. You know, it's like, exactly. It went foul.
Yu Darvish blows it after a solid start. Exactly. You know,
yeah.
By the way, Mookie Betts only hitting .261 this year. They should DFA that guy too. Just get rid of him.
Yeah, I think isn't Tatis Jr. only like at .224?
Yeah. Get rid of that guy. Get rid of that guy. Yeah, right now. Just start over. Scrap him. Start over. It's gonna all suck.
Freaking cover of MLB The Show. He's like the poster child for MLB, and Brandon Belt's hanging right with him. You know, no problems whatsoever.
It's just fun. Like, I know I'm harping on, like, you know, fans are idiots, but it's just funny that we live in this age of social media and stuff. So like, you could get to, usually you have to sit next to a guy at a ballpark to be like, this guy over here is an idiot. Now you get to see it all game long. Oh my god! Like, you know, the guy sitting next to you and he's like, you're a bum. And you're like, come on, dude, settle down. Now you got everybody on the damn internet, but it's hilarious.
All right, so Brandon Belt's hitting .232. Tatis is hitting .240. Brandon Belt has 8 home runs. Tatis has 9. Brandon Belt has 21 RBI. Tatis has 14.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, you know,
put Brandon Belt on the cover of MLB The Show.
It's like, that's Jesus, all I'm saying. Man. All right. Speaking of Tatis Jr., they did come back home. The Giants did to open up their third series against the Padres in this young year, which is just insane. But game one was a celebration. That was Willie Mays' 90th birthday party. And of course,
you were at this game.
Well, I tried.
Oh,
we won't get into the details on this show. A long story there. They celebrated Willie Mays out on the field. The Giants led 4-0 before San Diego tied it with a 4-run 6. 3 of those runs were off DeSclafani. But then, let me see if I have it here. Mr. Austin Slater stepped up to the plate in the 7th inning. And I need to get this up here. Here we go. Austin Slater coming up in the 7th.
Slater drives one to right. Look it up! Out of here!
Another opposite field home run.
Kid is happy.
Home run number 3 for Slater.
That's the thing. Another opposite. I mean, Slater's a strong boy. We've all known that.
A bunch of these guys are doing it, though. It's crazy.
He hit a ball so hard yesterday. It was an out because I was, you know, sitting right behind home plate. And I mean, it had the sound of a home run, but he just hit it at a lower angle. And it actually was a line drive almost right at the center fielder. But I ended up coming home last night and looking at the stat cast velocity, and it was the highest exit velocity of the entire game. It was 106 miles per hour. So even though it was an out, I mean, he has just been tattooing the ball lately. So Austin Slater come to the rescue. And the Giants win, what was that, 5-4?
5-4,
yeah. Yeah,
yeah. That's all we needed.
Is all we needed. And then, of course, Posey also had a home run. In fact, let me go ahead and share that because that was also opposite field. And I believe this is only, what, the third time that he's hit an opposite field home run at Oracle? And here we are. Buster Posey. This is in the bottom of the third.
Posey hits a high drive to right. It is out of here. And it's 2-0 Giants. I had to tell you something. He does not hit many to that spot.
But
he does it with two outs here in the third. And that, my friends, is home run number 8.
Yeah, keep throwing fastballs down the middle of Buster Posey, please.
Yeah, that was 95 like right down Meat Town. But, I mean, yeah, he didn't even bang that off the roof. That was like, that cleared by a lot.
It got to the cement. Yeah, it got over the seats.
Yeah, I think Blake Snell, he only gave up one hit. That was it. But he walked six. He walked six Giants. So Blake Snell is not exactly doing the job for the Padres as though they wanted him to.
It's excruciating to watch that guy pitch.
Yeah, he's like the opposite of Alex Wood. Alex Wood just steps on the mound and goes. Steps on the mound and goes. I mean,
The Padres are full of that. Dude, Darvish is the same way. I can't stand watching a Darvish game. I wanted to turn that freaking game off. I was like, all right, dude. Like, at least Cueto might hit you with a triple shimmy. Darvish just sits there and does the same damn stupid thing every time. It's so annoying.
Oh, my God. All right. So then they go on to game two. And here we go. This is kind of their ace. Although, I got to admit, even though Alex Wood started the season later than Gausman and the rest of the team, there's an argument for two aces right now on this team. Gausman and Alex Wood both have a sub-2 ERA. And, you know, remember it was Lincecum Day, right? We get so excited about, oh, it's Timmy Day. They're going to win, right? There's certain players, certain pitchers that take the mound where you're like, I got a 90% feeling that the Giants are going to win today. That's the way I get to feel now about Gausman and now Alex Wood. I don't know.
Yeah.
What are your feelings when those two take the hill now?
You're the third person to independently say that about Gausman and Timmy Days that I've heard.
Oh, really?
Which is really funny because I've been feeling the same way. When Gausman, I mean, it was a 7-1 cruising victory in game two against the Padres, and it was just the kind of game that you throw on and you can keep it as background noise because you know that Gausman's just going to keep rolling through the other team and the Giants are going to get enough offense like they did that day. I mean, it was just like a Timmy start from like 2012. I mean, you look at who contributed and then them adding on. It's really quite something to have that kind of a feeling with Gausman. And I agree with Wood going to the mound too.
Yeah, and all the scoring got started off with Brandon Crawford here in the bottom of the second with two runners on.
High drive to right. Myers looking up. Out of here.
That was the that's the Travis Ishikawa spot the right there, but it actually got all the way over.
7-4 Crawford.
Totally boom.
With that mind.
So some of these veterans are really having a power surge this year. I mean, Buster Posey's averages through the roof, but even these other guys who have low averages, their power's gone way up. It's like they're a microcosm for the major leagues themselves.
Well, this is what Crawford's 7th, or
I believe so.
He has 7 on the year, but he has 7. Posey has 8. Belt has 8. Nobody expected to have 20-some home runs from the three of them by now.
Well, you remember in the preseason episode, I said we could have 2 30 home run guys on the team, and both of you guys went.
It's been a long time since they had that, right?
So, yeah, I know. It sounded weird. Ridiculous at the time, and I was thinking of, you know, like Flores and stuff, but no, it's all the other guys, man.
Yeah.
It's our aging white boys that are like somehow coming in.
The hell want to get runs. Paid. I kind of like this.
Get their last contract on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, maybe it is motivating all three of these guys. Maybe they, you know, got together and said, let's make one more ride. You know, sure. who the hell knows?
Yeah. Hunter Pence gave him a speech and said, all right, boys, this is it. This is your last year.
Dude, by the way, 2-0 in the Hunter Pence era.
That's right. He was on the pre and post game shows over the weekend. He was actually, I only saw a few minutes, but he was pretty entertaining. So,
you know, people, this is like the rally toaster for the Warriors. It's the rally bunny.
Oh yeah, yeah, I saw.
You know, the people talking about the Warriors game. The bunny era. Yeah, the bunny is now making its rounds. It's gone all over the place now.
It'll be a Sharks game next.
Famous rabbit.
Better publicist than we do.
That's true. So the Giants go on to win 7-1 that game. Gausman gets the win, going six innings, allowing only 3 hits, 1 walk, struck out 7, and now has a 1.97 ERA. So it's looking great.
Mm-hmm.
So they already won the series, and you go into game 3 with Johnny Cueto coming off the injury
list. So we took a game off.
You know, it's like letdowns can happen, and it did. Look, the offense only scored 1 run, so regardless, the Giants, you know, if Cueto had a good game, still probably would have lost. But he comes off the IL, gives up 2 big homers, 5 runs. His velocity was pretty good. His location was not. If you look at those couple of bombs, the target was way off of where the ball went to. But it's okay. You know, things are going to happen. I think there was some confidence in some of the ability that he showed. And I think, you know, with a veteran coming off the injured list, maybe the adrenaline's pumping too hard. Maybe you're just not in that groove. So I think we have to wait to see his next couple of starts to start gauging.
Well, he didn't do a rehab start or anything. He just kind of came right back. So obviously, he seemed rusty. But he showed before he went down, he was looking good. So I don't know. Yeah. I feel fine.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, he had a Cueto inning, the one where he gave up the 4 runs. You know, sometimes he just kind of seems to lose focus. Mm-hmm. And coming off the DL, you can't do that at that time. And clearly the Giants just hate everybody's mother.
By the way, am I seeing this right? Did Ruff pitch in this game?
Oh,
he did. He gave him 2 runs, though. Oh,
my God. I did not watch the game, and now I need to watch that. I got to go find that inning.
It was glorious. I mean, it was funny because Brandon Crawford's wife actually tweeted out, "Hey, tell Kapler that Brandon wants to pitch." I would definitely love to see Brandon Crawford on the mound more than Darren Ruff. But Darren Ruff was still entertaining nonetheless. He was just out there, he looked like the old veteran throwing batting practice. Like there's no leg stride, right?
Yeah, just a simple
just a simple like step and toss, right? And he was hitting about 72, 73. And that was it. Just 72, 73 batting practice. And, you know, a couple of doubles, I think, were in there. But for the most part, you know.
Man, we miss Pablo, don't we?
I know. Pablo, he was a guy who actually tried, right? He was like, I'm going to get 3 outs.
He got into it, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty funny because after Ruff comes off the mound, I think at the time Casale was in. I don't think Buster was in. I think Casale was in. And, you know, do the whole, like, you know, tap the glove kind of thing, like good job. It's like you gave up only 2 runs, you know.
Well, I mean, Alvarez gave up 4, Cueto gave up 5.
Yeah, I know, right? So there you go. But Darren Ruff now has an ERA, so I guess that would be what 18.
ERA of 18. Yes.
So that's all right. He can, whenever he retires, that's what he can show his grandkids. Is like, look, guys, I hit 50 career home runs, and I have a career ERA of 18.
50 career home run.
I don't know. I'm just pulling.
No, I know, but it's true. It's about what he's gonna say.
Yeah, that's what you end up with. It's more than me.
Oh man. So all right. So interleague action happened, of course, the last 2 games versus the Texas Rangers. Game 1, Alex Wood, like we just talked about, gets on the mound. They win 3-1, and this is what's really cool is they were already up. The game was tied, and the Texas bullpen is chock full of lefties. In fact, they have 6 lefties in the bullpen, and Kapler knows this going.
Jeez.
In. Yeah, I know, right? So he had a lot of right-handers sitting on the bench despite – this is the whole plug-and-play thing. This is the whole strength of the Giants is that they don't have the Barry Bonds or the Tatis Juniors, although they have Brandon Belt now, or any of these guys, right? They rely on a bunch of, you know, pretty average platoon players, but they have – they're all major league players, right? They all have the capability of doing this. And so I went through the MLB film room. You know, have you guys ever used the MLB film room?
Yeah, I was just talking about this the other day. I posted it in our Discord for the other podcast we do.
Yeah.
I was like, I went down the rabbit hole, dude. I was looking at like Pablo Sandoval's best catches of, you know, 2012 or whatever. Like you could really get specific in there.
The search criteria is really, really cool. You can pull up any pitch from any game, period, right? And then they have this function where you can add each clip to your film reel, and then you can export that reel as your own custom kind of thing or whatever. And so that's what I did. I put together the 3 pinch hitters in a row that Gabe Kapler used in the bottom of the 7th with the game tied at 1. So we start with Austin Slater here.
On Saturday,
And it's the all-exciting ball four.
And that is too low.
Hey, that's what we need.
Ball formation.
Runner on. Darren Ruff comes up. What does he do?
That's home run number 50. Right, oh, never mind.
Base hit. And this is all with two outs, by the way.
I was about to say it.
Eric's favorite.
All hits.
And here we go. Third consecutive
two men on.
Pinch hitter. Mauricio Dubon.
Left field base hit.
Slap it teams can by do that. Otis.
The Dubon and the special right there.
Yep. And that was a long at bat. Alex outfielder. Wood getting
Slater
happy.
Scores the go-ahead run. Ruff over to third. Dubon to second.
How do you
second.
Turn that into
and
a double?
And at bat that was in the clutch.
It will watch this throw.
Ahead by
yeah,
Mauricio
no, yeah.
It was a horrible look at his.
Beep, what the hell yeah. are you doing, bro?
That's Chris Davis.
You've never heard of a cutoff, man.
And then this is not a pinch hitter, but this capped off the poor here's Charlie Culberson. Culberson. Loop.
And away.
Oh, jeez.
One run in. And holding it third is Dubon. 3-1 Giants.
Charlie Culberson is the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh,
I mean, that's who the Giants traded for Marco Scudero, too.
This is like the 2012 playoffs all over again. It's like just finding ways to score runs.
I know, right? So, you know, look, we just talked about Gabe Kapler. You know, he gets so much crap for, you know, making the wrong moves in the bullpen. But there's a great example, not just the pinch hit home runs, but three pinch hitters. How often do you see that?
I don't think I can ever remember that.
I mean, three pinch hit, you just burn through your bench. But guess what it did? It worked. Walk
won
hit,
the game.
Hit, won the game. So, boom. There you go, Kapler haters.
Yeah, sucking Kapler haters. Yeah, there you go. There's literally a win you can give right to him. Like, we used to give wins to Bruce Bochy all the time. Like, oh, masterful bullpen manipulation, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bochy won that game. Like, there you go. There's a game for Kapler.
And then they capped off the homestand and the mini sweep of the Texas Rangers with a 4-2 win yesterday. It was a nice, delightful 12:45 start. And I got to tell you guys, this is my first game of the year. There's nothing like day baseball. Oh, yeah. I just love it. I had a little traffic to deal with on the way home, but man, the sun was shining. It was a nice, crisp, you know, spring day. I don't know. It was just one of those invigorating days, you know? Went to the park, had a great seat right behind home plate, and Logan Webb. I mean, I went in going, that's okay. You know, I'm probably, probably gonna lose.
Were you pressed for this game?
Yeah, I was pressed for yesterday.
So where are you in the box? Is that like what's the situation?
Yeah, I'm in the box on the slightly on the left hand side. Right.
But is it like plate. You know? Is it kind of like the way it always was? Are there that many people in there, or is it really?
So what the Giants have done this year was, yeah, everything's distanced out. They had the tables marked off with blue tape where you could sit. Like, okay, you can sit here. And so I think they have a max of 36 media members per game. And, you know, and I know you guys know this part, but they have, you know, everything's done on Zoom and what have you. So, you know, I was able to go to, what, 5 games last year when there were no fans, which was really mm-hmm. eerie. This year, it was nice to see fans back in the stands. It felt a little bit more normal. Kind of looked like Candlestick back in the day. You know?
Sure. Yeah, I've been to many games with like
8,000
people.
Yeah, it was like, okay, but hey, there's fans here, right? Just weather was great.
It sounds like baseball.
You know. I do miss though for years. Obviously, we are able to go down on the field to watch batting practice, go to the Bochy pregame.
Oh, you can't do any of that, huh?
No, that's all tier one. So they have everything tier one, tier two. Tier two is media and all that stuff. Tier one, of course, are players, personnel, coaches who interact with each other. So unfortunately, yeah, we can't. And I think it's going to be like that the entire season. Like even if and when California opens up, because there's other states that have completely opened up, right? Like Florida and Texas. And the media still can't interact with the players. So this is
no, I mean, there's still, even though Texas is open, there's still a lot of COVID stuff going. Like, you know what I mean? It's like you still wear a mask pretty much everywhere you go.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? There's all these like weird rules around stuff. So I was watching a pool tournament the other day. And you know how there's the bridge or the granny stick if you aren't really a pool player? Each team of pool players had to have their own. And it's like, you realize they're like all touching the same table and the same like set of balls. And it's like, come on, this isn't going to make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, it's like sometimes you like go a little too far with random bullshit. And you're like, guys, like common sense. Like, come on.
What did
I
you
feel like
it
you
the
should
granny,
be
granny. What? What did
the
you
granny,
call it?
Well, a lot of people in bars call it the granny stick because.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I heard that.
I don't call it that, but that's like people, bar pool players, you know, they think that you're like a douche for using it or whatever. It's like, come on, man. It's just hard to reach that, you know?
Right?
Like, but yeah, so like, I feel like you should be able to walk in there and be like, can I just show you my vax card? And then I get to go, you know, interview players. But yeah, I guess I get it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Security was interesting yesterday because, you know, for media, just like if you're a fan, you have to have a negative COVID test within 72 hours or vaccination, right? And of course, you have to be to that point 2 weeks after your last shot. So you got to bring your card. So I had this all ready to go. And when I went in, no one checked anything.
Really?
In fact, the security guard, he scanned my badge and they have the x-ray machine there or the thing you walk through like at the airport. And then they usually open up your bag and check it.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you need to, what? And he's like, nah, man, just go. Okay. Wow. Thanks.
You could have snuck in all the liquor, man. Wow.
Oh man. All the liquor. Exactly.
Yeah. Like usually me and Chad are out in the parking lot beforehand, like trying to get prepped. But
exactly. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's our game notes, our prep for the game. Yeah. So it was a great day. Hey, look, I went in thinking Logan Webb, he's been real rocky lately and their weakest link really for all the semi-regular starters. And after the first inning, it looked like that was going to be the case. Of course, Jordan Lyles was pitching for the Rangers, and he's one of their worst starters. He had an ERA of over 7 coming in. And after one inning, it was already 2-1 Giants. So we're thinking, oh, man. And in fact, I think you even posted, Eric, oh, this is going to be like a 10-7 game or whatever. I'm like,
it totally looked like that kind of day was shaping up.
It's going to be a four-hour like game. Hit. Yeah, exactly. And then suddenly it was zeros. Just 0-0,
yeah,
0-0,
10
zeros.
Strikeouts later.
And Logan Webb had a career-high day, 10 strikeouts. He just started mowing everyone down after that. It was just fantastic. A lot of it on the off-speed changeup, of course. But, man, it was just fantastic because Jordan Lyles also settled down as well. And it ended up being a fairly crisp game until you had the same ex-Giant, Charlie Culberson, give another gift to the Giants.
2-2. Casale rips one on the ground to third. Culberson will throw all the way across in the dirt, and it gets away.
Belt would have dug that out.
And here comes Crawford.
Shame Casale can't
for the Giants. It's 4-1.
Yeah.
And that's a two-run mistake.
Poor Charlie. He really gave the Giants two wins.
It was a decent play, though, honestly. Like, I don't know.
He had time to throw it and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, he threw it. He did the right thing. He threw it into the ground. At the first baseman needs to take that out. Come on, bro. I don't know. I'm putting that on the first baseman, not Culberson. A third baseman makes that throw all the time in the dirt like that. You know.
So, you know, Casale, obviously, he's known for his defensive abilities. He had those 5 shutouts in a row, whatever you want to call it. He's a light-hitting catcher. We all know this. But, I mean, coming into that at-bat, he was hitting 111 or 109, I think it had gone down to. To his credit, he fought off a lot of tough breaking balls.
He's hitting 106.
Right, yeah, because it was after that error, because it goes as an over.
He went over for that game.
Yeah, yeah. But to his credit, like I said, he fought off a lot of tough pitches and kept the at-bat alive and at least put the ball in play. And right when he hit it, you know, I was thinking, well, a fleet-footed guy might beat this out, but I'm like, that's a really deep throw for Culberson, because he also had an awkward, you saw in the replay there, he kind of squatted, you know, backhanded it. But let's be honest, he had plenty of time. And Brandon Belt earlier in the game had to pick one from Flores or something, I can't remember, and he picked it fine. And I agree with you, Willie. I think that's definitely a play the first baseman himself would have
said.
Like
if he airmails it. Yeah, if he airmails it or something like that, then yeah, you know. But like when you throw it into the dirt, the first baseman's supposed to, a major league first baseman's supposed to make that play.
Well, and at the very least, right, block it, because 2 runs scored on that, not just 1. So
yeah, true.
It ended up being
true.
Kind
that's
of a
the, that's
there,
the so. Key right there, smart baseball. Also, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, the runner flashed past Culberson as he was setting up to throw, so you have to wonder if he got a little, you know, right out of the corner of your eye when you're throwing across the diamond, if a guy goes past you.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that concluded the homestand, and the Giants are sitting pretty here at 22-14 and 14-4 at home. So I don't know. Couldn't be more happy. I'm shocked where they are. This is pretty crazy. And they had Farhan Zaidi on the Tolbert show yesterday as I was driving home, and they were asking him about this, going, hey, look, you know, I mean, think most people expected you guys to be sellers at the deadline. You have a lot of these players, especially starters, on these one-year contracts that – statistically are blowing the doors off of their expectations in the form of Alex Wood and Gausman and others. what is going to happen here coming to the All-Star break, it looks, or the trade deadline, when the Giants are actually going to be in this race. And of course, Farhan wouldn't tip his, you know, hand at all. But what do you guys think? I mean, if the Giants are anywhere within, you know, 3-4 games of first place, whether they're up or down, I guess they sit tight. Do you think they try to acquire or play with what they have?
We're already acquiring, right? We already got Tackman.
That's true.
I feel like what we need to do is we need to add one bat. One bat. Somebody who can actually hit for average. Because, you know, you look at the stats, like we're like 24th in batting average or something like that.
Yeah,
we're like 5th in home runs, but, you know, it's the pitching is carrying us right now. So imagine if we could actually hit, you know, base hits. Imagine. It would be crazy, right? So, I feel like, if we could find one hitter, one, you know, solid hitter, that would really fill this team out.
Yeah. Well, Solano is that hitter, but he's...
So bring Solano back and we're good. Yeah, that's, like the trade.
Heal him immediately and, we'll be fine.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. Depth is really just, you know, Tauchman was a depth piece and they went out and got him. I mean, the Giants, it lit a fire under Duggar's ass because he's finally hitting the ball again, and going out and acquiring Tauchman did that. So I could see them acquiring another versatile depth piece like Farhan.
We do have prospects now, and if we really do feel like we're a legitimate team, we do have some, you know, some interesting items for other teams to be able to, you know, add somebody for a real run at it this year. And if you think about it, like, you know, you wouldn't think, like, to me, like, the reason why maybe we weren't really trying for, you know, like a title or anything like that is because of the Padres and the Dodgers and what their situation looked like. But clearly, like, that's whatever now. Like, maybe they're just not that great. Maybe, you know, I mean, obviously they both are still doing well offensively, but you know, maybe we don't have to worry about that. Maybe we are the team that can do it. So
yeah. I think, you know, we're definitely on the verge of eating some humble pie. But, I mean, there's a lot of the season left. Let's not kid ourselves that the Giants could go into a major skid and all that. But all the numbers in the past history that we went over with in the beginning of the show, 100% of the time they've been at this point, they've finished above 500. So that in itself is a lot better than I thought they were going to be. I think my guess was 77 or 78 wins, which I know is semi close to 500, but still under. So I think the prognosticators out there are like, wow, okay. So maybe there is some calculus to what Farhan is doing. See it. I just thought most people also predicted that this isn't coming for another, you know, at least till next year, if not the year after, especially after they clear the books with Belt's contract, Crawford's contract, Posey's contract.
That was the expectation.
Spend. Yeah.
But I feel like this is the type of year where we get like a Scudero or a Cody Ross or something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly we're like, hey, we love this guy, you know, just one more guy who kind of just completes the puzzle.
Or a starting pitcher. That's who I'd be willing to give up prospects for more than so. I don't know why, but, you know, you always want to get pitching. And the Giants do have some of the best starters in baseball, but they've all shown they're not going to stay healthy. Logan Webb is inconsistent. I mean, that was his best start. But, like, even yesterday, I wasn't sure where the ball was going half the time when he was throwing it.
So, well, his movement is ridiculous. Yeah,
it really is. Like, I'm not sure if he knows where it's going.
He doesn't. It's very clear. That's why nobody can hit it. You know what I mean? He can't throw for strikes, but, you know, no one can hit him.
No, I could see them adding pitching depth because these hitters are going to hit. But, you know, with this being Farhan, they probably could. I like the Cody Ross thought because this team's reminding me of 2010 a little bit.
Oh, I was about to say that. Yep. This is 2010 vibes. There's a lot of particles going on.
Well, we need Padres to be like 9 games up, though, for 2010 vibes.
Let's not say that.
We don't
not 2 games back.
We don't have season that. We need the good vibes.
Yeah. We can have the Padres choking.
Look,
like
if
they
it's
did
2010, I need to go on a camping trip when the Padres are up 5 games and then listen to every game in my car and somehow we win and they lose every game. That needs to happen exactly. It needs to be exactly the same.
And then it has to be the last game of the season. Brian Wilson comes in. Oh, wait.
Yes.
Never mind.
They need to run around and high-five the stadium after they win.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, let's talk about injuries. I guess it's the beauty of the team is this depth. So on May 4th, we had Tomlin Stella go down. He's expected to be out another 4 to 6 weeks, which is longer than initially thought, but hammies have a tendency to do that. So you had guys like Wilmer Flores batting against right-handers yesterday. You know, that has to happen because LaStella would naturally be the fit for that. But, you know, they're going to they have plenty of depth to kind of cover right now. We just can't have like another two or three guys go down. That's when I think it's, you know, it could spell some trouble. Good news, Tyler Beede is starting his rehab assignment this weekend in Sacramento, as is Lamont Wade Jr. Alex Dickerson last week was placed on the 10-day IL. Reyes Morantes has a mild sprained ligament and will be out a few more weeks. I don't know if that guy's ever going to be healthy again. Aaron Sanchez, after his last start, was placed on the 10-day IL. I honestly don't know exactly what his affliction is, but...
Derek Hollanditis? I don't know.
Yeah. He cut himself with a knife while separating.
Well, you remember a couple of years ago, Holland, in Farhan's first year, remember Holland was put on the IL and he was like, you know, I don't know, it was this or that. Like, he totally acted, you know, it was not a real injury.
Yeah, it wasn't a real injury. It was like, yeah, Sanchez is definitely, it's a high wire act when he's out on the mound. There's no doubt about that.
Is.
His stats aren't that bad. Well, the walks are, but the ERA isn't that bad. But his expected ERA is way higher. So he's had a little magic out there. And then yesterday, Belt was listed as day-to-day with mild left side tightness. In fact, during the game, yeah, we didn't know what was going on. Suddenly, Belt was out. He was pinch hit for, and no one in the press box understood what was going on. We just assumed that he had some sort of, you know, bug injury. Something was bothering him.
Man, I got both side tightness, dude. So,
who doesn't have side tightness?
I got up and down, left and right tightness. This is tight.
The top and bottom and left and right, yeah. And then Kapler, after the game, said hopefully Donovan Solano will be ready to start a rehab assignment this coming weekend.
Thank
so
God.
We need him back, man.
Yeah. He, I mean, he was clearly our strongest hitter before he went down. And, yeah, it's been rough since then, honestly, offensively. But somehow we're pulling it out. Somehow we're scrapping it together.
Yeah. And as far as transactions, just things that I haven't highlighted yet, of course, Joey Bart came up and down. Connor Menez was sent down to Sacramento. They did trade Sky Bolt to Oakland for cash.
Yeah, Bart didn't get any at-bats, did he?
He did.
He got one pinch.
He did? Okay.
He got one pinch hit. Yeah, I think he got his, that's it. Jason Vossler, of course, has been up and down once or twice this week as well, although – on May 9th, he was optioned back down to Sacramento. So that's about it after, you know, activating Johnny Cueto, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yastrzemski and Jarlin Garcia.
Do you guys see that Ramos was like minor league player of the week or something like that? I don't know if it was for his exact league or whatnot, but
he's hot this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. A lot of fans are clamoring for him to make it to the show. And it's like, all right, guys, he's young. Let's He'll pump the brakes. It's going to come. It's going to come. But, you know, probably not this year, but we'll see. If they expanded the rosters more to like 30, I think you might see them. But that doesn't happen anymore. So, all right. Around the league, we talked about this a little last night on Hard Edition. But two more no-hitters happened since our last episode. That's crazy. So we had Wade Miley was the latest one, which is kind of funny because he just doesn't strike me as that no-hitter kind of guy. But... we talked a little bit about maybe some of the factors going in. We certainly know batting averages are down in league. They're using a ball that carries a little bit less. But there's been some preliminary analysis of spin rate and movement, and that this ball might actually be aiding in increasing those factors as well, which of course is aiding the pitchers. So besides that, I mean, do you have any idea of why the hell we've had four no hitters and almost five? Remember, we're discounting Madison Bumgarner's gold
star. Four and seven ninths of a no-hitter.
That's right. Yes. Four and seven ninths of no-hitters, you know, his notable achievement. So let's just, you know, almost five no-hitters this year. So I don't know, guys. What do you think? We're not even a quarter of the way through the season. We're tracking on having like 16 no-hitters this year. Like literally. That's crazy.
I mean, it'd be kind of fun, though, too. It's going to get kind of boring after a while. I think it's a confluence of events. I think that if the spin rate thing you mentioned, that's the first I heard of that, it is true. And pitchers are just better now. And granted, it was Wade Miley. But it's just tough to reconcile. And then the approach, the Giants have shown this. The approach is find your right pitch and swing at it. And so there's been a whole all or nothing mentality going on. So I think that really factors into it too. So I wouldn't be shocked if we see a couple more this year. I really wouldn't. But I think you know, coming back from last year being a weird year, hitters don't seem to be with it this year, and that's really a big factor. I mean, this is what, the first time or second time ever there was four hitters before May 8th or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is crazy. I brought this up on Torch or on a Hard Edition last night, but I think a lot of it has to do with the modern day approach to defensive positioning.
Oh.
Yeah. We just know all of it. We know all the info where everyone's hitting the ball, and a lot of hits are getting taken away. So.
Yeah, I don't quite understand it. You know, I went down the rabbit hole last night, and I'll send a link to you guys, but for those of you listening, if you want to look at the analysis of the MLB shifts, just Google MLB Shift Analyzer. It's all on Baseball Savant, by the way, if you guys have ever explored through that. And it is fun. So they rank it by batter and how what the percentage of times that they hit that the defense shifts, right? And they define a shift as having three fielders to one side of second. So that's how they define a shift. And it is pretty incredible. So you have guys like, for example, right at the top of the list, you have Matt Carpenter, for example, right? St. Louis Cardinals. You bet he's a left-handed batter. He's had 65 total plate appearances. They have shifted all 65 of his plate appearances, 100% of the time. And you go down this list.
Does that just mean he's coming up with nobody on base every single time? Like, what the hell?
No, you know, literally, yeah. If you click on him, I mean, literally 65 plate appearances.
Because if you got a runner on second, it's pretty tough to shift, like, you know.
Yeah.
But right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you go down this list, it's all ranked by percentage of shifts. There's two guys with 100%. The other guy has only had 15 plate appearances for the Astros. But you have Carlos Santana, 100 out of his 102 plate appearances they've shifted. I went and I found Brandon Bell, and it was like 80-something percent of the time they've shifted on him. And then you can see the hot spot kind of map where they show where the fielders typically are for them. And then their expected batting average and on-base average, and then their actual on-base average. So it's pretty interesting. I want to dive further into this to really understand how much of an advantage statistically each team is getting over a long period of time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if they've shifted, you know, what was last night? I think Bryce was telling us the Dodgers are leading with like 700 and something. Shifts.
They shift more than anybody else. Apparently.
Yeah. And the Giants have shifted like 250 times.
Yeah.
So the Dodgers have done it a lot more.
But
than the
Astros are the best at it, apparently.
Right. Yeah. So it's benefited them the most out of any other team. So I want to.
It's weird though, because you'd really need enough stats on non-shifted at-bats and shifted at-bats to then see like a difference in batting average where the numbers aren't like, oh, there was five non-shifted at-bats. You know what I mean? Like, it's tough. It's tough to get numbers that aren't just like, well, that's just too small of a sample size to matter.
Right.
But it's you know, it's the way, like you were mentioning too, that they're shifting different on two strikes now. Like they're doing, it's so intricate at this point. That you know, it's not even just, oh, this hitter hits here. It's this hitter hits here with, you know, one strike. This hitter hits here with two strikes. So move differently. It's nuts. And I really do think, I do think it's making a difference, man. It's a lot of hits are getting taken away that normally would be. You know, it's got to be frustrating for guys like Brandon Belt, Matt Carpenter. Like, it's got to be frustrating. They're like, come on, man. There's not supposed to be a guy there, you know, like my whole career, I've been hitting it there. But like I was also, we were also saying, like, I would, if I were these guys, I would bunt down the third base line every single time until they stop doing it. But that's just me. I don't know.
Yeah. If you flip the shift percentage, you know, obviously 90% of the shifts are done on left-handed batters. You know, they don't often shift for right-handed. I mean, they do.
They move the guys like to right over second base or and then deep into the hole, like that kind of stuff. But
yeah, it's not as drastic.
It's not as drastic. You have guys like, you know, Tim Anderson's.
Well, because you can't pull the first baseman.
Well, you can't pull the first baseman, but you could put the second baseman on the left side, right?
You could. Yeah, absolutely.
But you have like Tim Anderson, 106, you know, plate appearances, zero shifts on him, right? You know, stuff like that. So that's kind of the norm for a lot of right-handers. But yesterday it was really interesting because you don't always see it when you're watching it on the broadcast because it's usually focused in on the batter or the pitcher. But to see Brandon Crawford, especially against guys like Joey Gallo and other left-handers where they would shift over, but you'd have Brandon Crawford on the right side, the second base side of second base, and you'd have Evan Longoria playing like a super deep shortstop, right? Mm-hmm. And so leaving third base all open. But almost every time the shifted batter got to two strikes, then Crawford and Longo would switch. Mm. And so Longo would go take Crawford's position, and then Crawford would go back to the deep short position. And so that's something that I'm not entirely sure about why that's happening, because they're almost in the same position. They're just swapping physically. And so I'm like, well, who, I mean, both have capable arms. I mean, Crawford has a little more range, but
that is weird.
I don't quite understand that.
Teams are doing
it happened
that.
Over and over and over again. It was really interesting to watch.
It's got to be something with turning the double play, and I'm not sure how it factors in completely, but that's really been my guess for, you know, who's at the pivot on the double play, and that's about it. But
well,
it is
when
weird
you
flip.
When you get to ask questions again, Chad, I think you should
well,
remember
there
that
was,
one. Put that in the back pocket.
This there was the double play that was turned, that was overturned. By the way, Texas challenged three replays and were successful overturning all three. That first one, I believe it was the first one, was Crawford on the right side of second base. It was a ground ball up the middle. And he had to run a long way to get to second base, where he was like running with the ball in his hand. And then as he's stepping his right foot on second base, he's thrown across his body to first. And this initially called him out. And on replay, it was, to me, it was too hard to tell, which typically will mean they will stay with the call on the field. But it was a four minute replay. And everybody in the press box was getting really upset about it. And
that is annoying.
There's some moments in the press box, yep. But Kerry Crowley was sitting behind me, and he was getting really pissed.
If you're at minute two and you haven't figured it out yet, then just don't overturn it. You know
yeah, and
mean?
Then they overturned it, and then they showed the replay in the press box multiple times, and I was like, it might be a tie, but it's not enough to overturn. There was nothing clear, and so we didn't really understand what the hell was going on.
There's got to be like a time limit on this shit. You know, it's like, that's stupid. Yeah. Like,
it was so bad, because what happened is it was so long. It was a 4 minute and like 3 second replay. Logan Webb had to go back on the mound. They actually allowed him to throw like three or four warm-up pitches.
Yeah.
That should not be happening when the pitcher needs to warm up again. That's ridiculous.
No one got hurt. Nobody's like, you know, it's like, come on, guys. Like, pull it together.
And he struck the next, you know, next guy out. But it still, I was like, Jesus Christ, guys. This is bad. All right. So coming up, the Giants have four in Pittsburgh starting tomorrow. And then I think is it four or three in Cincinnati?
It's four.
It is four, so it's 4-4.
Yeah, it's
huh?
2 4-game series. Yeah,
yeah, it's a weird road trip.
These are their only visits to those two cities, so they always cram them in.
I think we're going 6-2. This is when we get back to a winning record on the road. I think it's literally maybe a sweep in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
and then a split,
4-game sweep. That
and then
would
a
be
split
a tall call.
A split in Cincinnati.
Yeah. No, well,
this is a hitter's park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We're going to freaking Pittsburgh, dude. We're going to smash the ball out there. Come on.
Well, yeah, Pittsburgh's obviously one of the worst teams in the majors. So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, obviously when you go on the road, you want to at least break 500. That's kind of the goal. But when you're playing the Pirates, because they're such a poor team, your goal's got to be three. It's got to be 3 out of 4,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know?
It does.
And then if they take, you know, 1 out of 3 in Cincinnati, because here's the thing. Cincinnati lines up. The first game is going to be Logan Webb. We don't know how he's going to pitch, but it's that, you know, bandbox of a stadium. I mean, if he gives up a couple of gophers, there you go. That could be the game. So if you lose 2 out of 3 in Cincinnati, come home with a 5-3. Well, I guess that would be 4-4. But, yeah, I think you got to shoot for 3-2, man. You got to. Come home with at least 5 wins, but... Let's go with 6, like Willie says.
Yeah, 6-2.
Keep the
I'm telling
pressure
you.
On the Padres and the Dodgers.
Sweeping
man.
The Pirates.
And by the way, the Dodgers, who started, you know, at 13-2, they were being called the best team in baseball, maybe in history, by some national reporters. They were on pace to win like 140 games.
But the best team in history doesn't have Max Muncy on it. I'm sorry.
that's very true.
The funky Muncy.
But for the first time since 2017, the Dodgers have lost 5 consecutive series. So,
yeah.
Wow.
It's not like the Giants have been playing 900 ball. They have the best record in the majors. So, obviously, they've been playing well. But they've really accelerated in the stands, mostly because of the failings of the Padres and the Dodgers combined with playing slightly above 500. So, thank you, LA, for being mediocre lately. That would be great. So I just wish the Giants played the Dodgers during this stretch of mediocrity, because they could have really beaten
them. I know, right? To be able to just, yeah, pounce on that, like, while we're hot and they're not, that would be sweet. But
yeah, because, I mean, look, they won 8 division titles in a row. It's not like we expect them to finish the season around 500.
No,
that is not happening to the Dodgers.
And I really hope the Lux home run isn't some turnaround moment for them, like you were saying, Eric. But
That's the kind of thing that gets them going, though, as a team, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got Trevor Bauer, you know, popping off about how he's pissed that this team isn't winning. And
I can't stand that.
I know. I know. Yeah. Cheater, pumpkin eater, whatever. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for episode 224 of the Torchcast.
Wait, we'll be real back. Quick.
Oh, yeah. Go
real
ahead.
Real quick. I want to give you guys a little trivia here.
All right.
1993 Giants trivia. You ready?
Oh, boy.
We mentioned the team this podcast. And so I just pulled up their baseball reference. You had four guys who were like the starters that year that we knew were the starters. You had mm-hmm. Bill Swift, John Burkett, Trevor Wilson, Bud Black. Mm-hmm. Can either of you, there were one, two, three, four guys who started more than five games.
No.
Besides those four. Can you name any one of them? I'll give you any one of them. You can name out of four guys. If you guys could pull these names, it would be so sick, dude.
Yeah.
I can see Eric going into the tank right now, but
I am, but I don't think I'm.
By the way, this is also the year Rod Beck had 48 saves, so this is quite a year, man.
Shooter,
is that too early for somebody like Trevor Wilson?
Yeah.
Well, Wilson was part of the starting four. He started 18.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Swift, Burkett, Wilson, Bud Black. Those were like our main four. Those were the guys who were like going to be the four in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These names are like so funny. If you can't pull one, I'll just, you know, I'll tell you guys.
Because I don't think Torres is going to be on that list either, because
you got one, buddy.
Okay. Well, because
he started eight games.
Yeah, he did start the last game. That would be the only reason I'd be able to pull it, is because of Solomon Torres starting that last game. But yeah, he started eight games for us that season. But the other guy,
yeah,
15 games started by
Kirk Reed.
Brian Hickerson.
Well, but so I remember that last game of the season. Weren't they talking about Kirk Reeder starting instead of
Brian Hickerson? Well, wait, Torres was in there was a playoff game, right? That was
the last game of the season. Yeah.
No, I don't think Woody was Woody.
I guess
Woody wasn't on the team.
He wasn't
on the team. Yeah. You're thinking
that's when he was still. Steal with Montreal.
Woody was, that was 2002 when we were talking about Woody.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking 93, baby. This is old school. We had Jeff Brantley. Dave Righetti was on the pitching staff.
Yeah.
Brantley was somebody who came to mind. Who the hell is Hickerson, though? I do not remember.
I know, right? Yeah.
I do remember Hickerson, but I would have never guessed that.
So the four were Brian Hickerson with 15. Scott Sanderson started eight games.
Oh, wow.
Greg Brummett started eight games.
No, I do not remember him.
And then Jim DeShays got four starts, but
JD started four times. Wow, yeah.
I did not remember Jim.
I didn't know he was a Giant.
And you know what's funny? I remember Jim DeShays more than I remember Brian Hickerson.
Wow,
like what the fuck, Brian Hickerson? How do I? How is he just like a black hole in my mind? Like I can't even think of what he looks like. You know what I mean?
Oh my god!
But that was my era, dude. I was 13 years old. We were. Won 103 games. Like I watched like every single game. We had Willie McGee on that team.
You know? We were dancing in our parachute pants, having a great
time. We had Matt Williams. We had Willie McGee. We had Robbie Thompson. Yeah. That was Royce Clayton.
I was wearing my purple blazer and like, oh man, it was great.
Darren Lewis in center field. That team was something.
Yeah. I was like a junior in college then. That was great days. Great days, man. Oh, man. All right. That's going to do it for episode 224. We'll be back next Monday, probably just after the Pittsburgh series. We'll just be reviewing four games. We'll be streaming it live on Facebook again around 12:15 or so Pacific time. You can follow us collectively on Twitter at TortureCast. Like us on Facebook. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric, at Willie Dills for Willie. I know that Willie and I have Heart Edition. The podcast going on. We just recorded last night episode. I think it was 14 last night.
14, yeah. We're in double digits.
So check that out at Heart Edition Pod on Twitter. And I know you got a lot of streaming going on today, don't you, Willie? Well, you got some cool action. You got all sorts of stuff.
I'm going to be doing a money match in about 3 hours. So check it out, twitch.tv/WheelieDills. I'm going to be playing my buddy Zach. We're doing a race to 9 8-ball for some cash. And then we probably will have some Scotch Devils action afterwards. So, yeah, it should be fun.
How is that going to be streamed? Like, Ty going to be holding the phone or something? What's going on?
No, I have a little I just put it on a tripod and just angle it down and just try to get, like, a view of the whole table. Yep.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yep.
And Ty is going to come.
Find out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ty is going to come, and he said he's going to do, like, commentary and stuff while the match is going on.
Oh, God,
so
yeah.
Cool.
I'm going to tune in just for that, see what Ty does to raise you guys. That'll be fun.
He's just going to be talking shit the whole time. Oh, yeah. He's going to be like, oh, I would have made that.
Clearly. No pressure. Eric, what about yourself, man?
Belt would have made that shot.
Belt could do no wrong.
Kapler's got a call in the pinch hitter. Here we go.
That's what you call it when he uses the bridge. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Get the granny.
As always, I'll pimp Giants Chatter on Facebook. It's a Facebook group. Join it, even though Facebook is Facebook. And I wanted to highlight Drew Robinson real quick. Drew Robinson is an outfielder in the Giants organization who a year ago tried to kill himself by shooting himself in the head, and he took away one of his eyes.
Yeah, he did shoot himself with it, like, literally did it.
Yep. And
holy shit.
He came back, and he is better than ever. He hit a home run the other day for Sacramento right here in Las Vegas. I did not.
Well, he's missing an eye, so I don't know if he's better than ever. But
well, he's alive, so.
He was probably better when he had two eyes.
Okay. Mentally, he's better than ever, right?
Yeah.
Physically, sure. Not so much.
For sure.
It's a great story. Check it out. There's a story on ESPN about him. And suicide is no joke. So if you ever need help, 800-273-8255 is the National Suicide Hotline. I just thought I'd throw that out there because I thought the Drew Robinson story was a fantastic story. And as much as we are... I can't believe I said it like that. once again, the National Suicide Hotline, 800-273-8255. There's people out there. Mental health is important. And, you know, if this guy can make it back, everybody can, you know, there's ways to bounce back. There's resources out there to reach out to. And it's just, it's a great story. I mean, I couldn't imagine playing baseball with one eye, let alone after shooting myself to lose that eye. Mm-hmm, so I can't imagine what this guy went through. So it's really impressive to see him back. And wherever his story goes from here, he already made it back. He already won.
I mean, not only that, it wasn't even that long ago.
This
suicide attempt happened during COVID quarantine. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah,
to be back this quickly. And also, like you said, playing baseball with one eye. Like, how do you hit a ball with no depth perception?
He's
figured it out.
And it's his lead eye.
Imagine.
He's
a what if he
batter.
Was a right-hander? Yeah, and now he's got to hit lefty? What? Like, come on.
I don't know. It's incredible. Yeah, I saw that he hit that home run yesterday, the day before, and it was like,
I mean, he
crap,
smoked that
man.
Thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I don't know. I guess there was like another major leaguer, or maybe it was just a professional ball player from a couple decades ago. He's not the first with one eye, but he's certainly a rarity. I can't even imagine trying to do
that. Yeah. Like, I feel like one hand is easier than one eye. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You had Jim Abbott, right?
It's got to be thrown.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so if anyone out there
good
is,
on him.
Going like, my eyesight isn't that good. That's why I sucked at baseball. Yeah, maybe it wasn't your eyesight.
Maybe you just sucked at baseball.
Yeah, maybe just sucked at baseball. So, all right, well, that'll do it, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next Monday for episode 225. Until then, stay safe. Bye-bye.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.